You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Hello, you beautiful people. Table Talk is a guide to the future of food and nutrition, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we chat with visionaries from across the food industry to discover the ideas that will transform our food landscape. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a broadcaster, and I'm a gastronaut. Now, today we're starting a whole new series in which we're going to get up close to people behind some of the really exciting, innovative brands. We'll be discovering their personal journey, as well as their passions, their inspirations, and hopefully some insights on the industry. Our first guest is Joseph Eyre, co-founder and CEO of Bose Gelato, the plant-based ice cream brand, which was the winner of Plant-Based Product of the Year at Food Matters Live Awards 2021. Now, I'm hoping for stories of sunshine, some ice cream parlours and dreams and nostalgia maybe, but we'll see. Welcome, Joseph. Great to have you with us.
Thanks very much, Stefan. Hello there. Great to be here.
Really good to have you. First of all, I'd just like to say that why didn't you call it Joe's Gelato? You know, it's a bit of an
oversight there, I know.
Alliteration. I mean, I'm offering this advice for free. But, you've gone for Bose. No, that's not the point. So I watched the video of you, your reaction to winning the award, and it's just so lovely. It's a video stream from a beach in the sunshine. There's a gorgeous person by your side, and you both sounded just so much full of joy and a real sense of happiness and love for your business. What does it feel like to win the award?
Yeah, no, I mean, you summed it up perfectly. That's exactly what it was. It was joy, happiness, love for the business, love for the people that we work with at the business. Just that happiness in that moment that a product like ours, which for ourselves, you know, it's such strong ties to us and our values, a product that we'd worked so hard on to be a good product for so many reasons, for the environment, a good product for people to, you know, engage with and enjoy and experience, that this product could win such a prestigious award and be acknowledged amongst such incredible competition. I think we were just, overjoyed. Overjoyed probably mostly at all the kind of the little things, you know, all the time we'd spent putting into looking at things like plant-based ink for the box, you know, those little things that you're not sure if anyone's ever going to sort of recognize them. I think you know, to have the product then being acknowledged and those aspects being acknowledged as important, we were just absolutely delighted with that. Yeah. Really happy.
And also, I love the idea of plant-based ink. That's just, let's sort of discover a little bit about you and your journey. So was the love for food and for business always in you?
I don't know about a love for business, although I've practiced business most of my working life a lot more than I've been working with food. That love for food has always been there. That's for sure. I think if you were to, you know, take a look at our photo albums from all our travels, you're more likely to find pictures of mac and cheese in New York and burgers in Chicago than you are, you know, us and the Empire State Building and stuff. So things we probably should have been taking photos of. So yeah, always love food, always love the kind of discovery that goes with food, just being able to try new things in new settings with new people and to sort of have those different experiences of just how people interact with food and how it has that power to kind of bring people together, to share in an experience. That for us, especially for ice cream, was such an important aspect of what drove us to want to do ice cream rather than any other sort of dessert that we were, you know, considering back in the day. But I think that's always going to be really exciting. Certainly something, I've always had a love for. Love for business, maybe not so much. I think my interest in business has always been to use it as a vehicle to do something or affect a change in the world. Yeah. So not such a love for business, but an understanding of how, you know, we can use it to do something that we'd like to affect something positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and that is an interesting marriage of the two, isn't it? That it's a tool to get something done. And so back to your sort of personal story, was there a turning point for you with food? Was there a moment where it all clicked and you thought, I could do this. This could be my job.
Yeah, probably way back before we even started Bose, actually. When I was, I think it was around about 2010, 2011, and we were, you know, traveling around, and indeed we were actually in America on this occasion. And we just had some really fantastic experiences, just in different settings. But one in particular, actually in an ice cream parlor in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, was just that made me think, oh, this was fantastic. I love this as an experience. I love what this brought to myself and Amber, my wife, who was going to become the co-founder of Bose. And that was one experience in particular, which was really fantastic. So we'd both been plant-based for some time, but, you know, the plant-based landscape back in 2010 was very different. And we'd known about this ice cream parlor that had dairy-free options. So we ventured there, as we did on our pilgrimage to just food sites. And it had a sign on the outside that said, dairy-free ice cream available within. So we went inside, but when you went inside, everything was dairy-free. And I really loved that. Even back in 2010, there was this company that was pitching itself to be accessible to everyone, had that awareness that people might be put off by something like dairy-free at first. And then whomever came in, there was something for them. And that for me, as a just as a fantastic experience, the quality of the ice cream was amazing. And it was this almost, at the time, it sounds almost crude now because there's been so much development in the plant-based and vegan world, but it was a veganization, this veganification of a food space that we'd never really experienced before.
Yeah.
And I think for us, we were like, this would be fantastic if we could take that experience and share that with people at some point. So that was probably the point where I thought, wow, we could really, I'd love to do something about this.
I love the word veganization. but I mean, what an amazing time to be a plant-based company. And I'm interested in whether you think it's a sort of chicken or egg situation. You know, is it just great luck that you decided to do plant-based at a time when interest in plant-based exploded and consumers really took it on? Or is it the fact that companies like yours are there? Is that why the market has gone so huge?
Yeah, gosh, that's a massive question. I'll address it back to front. I think the reason it's so huge is because there's at the moment, there's so many access points to that profile of product, you know, whether it's because there's a greater awareness of intolerances or dietary requirements that's taken people to go dairy free, whether it's the kind of popularity of some of these documentaries that have come out and that kind of sympathetic view towards animals or the environment, or whether it's just a case that hopefully this is the case for companies like ours too, that quality from plant-based companies or companies producing plant-based products has risen, and therefore there's a wider market. It's more accepted. And it certainly hasn't always been that way. You know, even a few years ago, the landscape was very different, but it's come on phenomenally in the last few years. In terms of sort of our journey and trajectory on that, there's probably two elements. We were on our own journey to make a contribution in a space that sort of was more value aligned to what we were interested in. And we were kind of always on that sort of journey for our own careers and wanted to do something significant. And so that had developed on its own kind of strand and its own journey. So I think we were always going to be doing something in that space. But yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, my sort of disposition is always to be fairly research based with things. So when we started looking at, was this viable? There was undoubtedly, you know, my background's quite business-based, working in the city in a variety of settings. So there was always that kind of, right, we need a business plan here. We need to make sure we're well-researched. We need to make sure this is a viable option that can actually stand on its own two feet and we can do this. So when we started the business, yeah, I sort of plunged myself into Mintel reports and global data reports and things to see how the market was, what the likelihood of success was. Mm. And I think that was always important that we kept our feet on the ground with something tangible. So there was that element to it. And in terms of the timing, yeah, I mean, I think because when I started to look into that back in 2016, 2017, there was a growing trend. It was just starting to emerge that, you know, 500,000 people, I think was a widely quoted stat, 560,000 or something, you know, back in 2016 were identifying as vegan in the UK. And that had grown tenfold from the prior year. So it was clear there was already something significant happening there. So in terms of then how we aligned our trajectory with the market, it's yeah, probably less of a coincidence that we're here at this point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about viability and trying to work out, is this going to work? Was it also a sense that technology and the understanding of process and the science of how plant-based could work, and literally the physical kit that you can buy, was there a moment where you suddenly thought, oh, we can do this because the stuff is there to be able to do it with?
I think that very much has become increasingly the case. To be honest, I don't think it was so much the case for us, other than that there was much more access to, like you say, an understanding of processes and technology. It was just then a case of us trying to change that pathway, change that process to make it appropriate for a plant-based set of ingredients.
Yeah.
When we first started Bose and went out and did a bit of training, it was clear that, so we went out to the Gelato University in Bologna.
Which
was good fun.
That's my kind of school.
Yeah, all about how to make gelato. And I'll be honest, I actually thought as we went out there that I thought, oh, this will be fantastic. We're going to go and taste a load of gelato. And we got there and they sat us down in a private study room and got out calculators and graph paper.
Yeah, it's all about technology. It's all about maths.
Yeah.
Engineering.
So that was really interesting. But that was a reimagining process, I think, and a re-envisioning process for them as much as it was for us as well. You know, they do these courses on how to become a gelatier over a month. And we'd approached them and said, can you do the whole thing, but just within a plant-based framework? And they said no. They said no, we can't do that. And we convinced them. They took us on a one-to-one basis, but it was very much us sat there, you know, dissecting what was a gelato and how can we reimagine it with the key components that would still allow it to be that classic Italian gelato, still have the same profile and the same creaminess, but imagined with a plant-based base and ingredients only.
Yeah. That's interesting, actually. Also, I mean, you know, is the Italian approach to gelato the plant-based? Boof, get out of here, you know. Or do they also embrace it?
I think it was already, you know, there was certainly on my journey to gelato, I kind of experienced gelato twice, probably, you know, experiencing it first as a consumer and knowing about gelato, having it on my travels in the past and thinking this is fantastic. And then kind of discovering it when we went to learn how, you know, you break it all down. And yeah, I think it was sort of maybe two cultures there. One was that there was already so many options that were plant-based. So, you know, pistachio and these great pralines and so many fantastic fruit flavors that were just vegan anyway. But the concept of thinking only vegan was definitely a new one.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about a little bit about the sort of the business journey, because a lot of people listen to this podcast because they've got a new idea that they think might make a big hit. What was it like for you? Was it traumatic? Was it long? Was it what you expected? What was the corporate journey? How did you find it? And do you still have all your hair?
So the corporate journey in the context of Bose and starting up a new business, yeah, it's very different. I mean, just as a bit of context, so sort of my background had been fairly corporate anyway. So I'd had some experience working in the city, worked with Deloitte as an accountant, and worked then for an investor, an investment manager in the city. But it's very different setting up your own business. It comes with a completely different set of challenges. And when it's very different doing something where you're analyzing another business or engaged in someone else's business to starting on your own and then suddenly wearing 100 hats all at the same time and balancing that whilst actually carrying out the activity of the business that you're trying to establish.
But what are the pinch points? Well, you know, 50% of businesses fail within the first 5 years.
Yep.
What were the bits that really pushed you to the brink?
I think sometimes, you know, I don't know if it sounds a bit cliche, maybe it's a bit cliche in my mind, but sometimes you just have to hang on. I don't think you can account for how much you just have to hang in there sometimes. I saw a nice quote from, I think it was Steve Jobs, which I'm probably going to ruin here, but a word the other day, which was something about, you know, it helps if you're passionate about what you're doing, because if you're not, otherwise it's crazy. And any sane person would turn back, because what you're asked to do with the hours you need to put in to make something succeed is incredibly difficult. And you need that reason to keep coming back to it. So if you're sort of value aligned with your business, if you really believe in it, and there's something you're tangibly trying to achieve, then that makes all the difference. That provides that fuel for you to keep going, or a reason for you to keep going. But yeah, it's difficult. I think it's important to, you know, not be hard on yourself, but you have to go into it with your eyes open, knowing that it's not going to be, unless you've got very deep pockets, and even then it's not going to be an easy ride. It's going to be a bit of a roller coaster, but you get those highs with it as well. You know, there's going to be the lows. But I mean, for me, one of the things that, like, I took from my experience before Bose was to try and make sure that you were quite granular in your approach and that you always got kind of the little things right. So if you focus in on getting the little things right, it's very little place that the big things, you know, can go in a different direction.
Sounds like very, very wise advice.
Yeah. So I would say, just, people say don't sweat the small stuff. I'd say probably sweat over it quite a bit.
And then the big stuff will just fall into place. What about the bits that you didn't expect you'd have to deal with? You know, that, you know, when you're setting up a business like this, you probably think, yeah, I'm going to make some great gelato. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be new, and we're going to have some whizzy packaging. And then suddenly you're looking at nutrition analysis, health, you know, claims on packaging itself, you know, warehousing, HR. Which was the bit that you kind of thought, oh, I didn't think I'd have to do this bit?
HR is probably not far from the top of the list, actually. I think when you're looking at page 126 of your employee handbook not knowing where the days have gone, you do question a few things. probably that was really challenging. But you're right, you do wear an awful lot of hats and you struggle to find the interest in all of these areas. I think the more that you can tie what you're doing, and what something that we've tried to do is tie what we're doing in any area of the business to the values that we have. So for example, like you mentioned, food safety and health and safety and these kind of aspects. When we started the business, because we do the manufacturing in-house, one of the most important things for us, one of the reasons we're doing it in-house, was because we felt it was important that we were kind of enabled with that understanding and those skills to be able to make kind of positive impacts with what we're doing. So for example, you know, if we're using cashews and suddenly that supply chain is not looking so positive, or we're not able to really make a nice impact or a good impact with particular suppliers, then with that skill set where we can shift and say, right, let's move across to oat, let's have a look at rice, let's enable ourselves to have that. So I think studying food safety, you know, neither of us had worked in food before, so that was a bit of an uphill battle, but we thought it was kind of important. And because it was just tied into what we wanted to achieve, I think it made it a bit softer.
Yeah, so each of these challenges is something that you kind of think, well, okay, I can do something good with this. Okay, let's talk about the business model. You're running a subscription service. Tell us a little bit more about that and why.
Yeah, so the subscription service. So this is essentially a monthly ice cream club. So each month, the Pint Club, we send out one of our signature flavors paired with something a little more innovative, maybe it's seasonal, maybe something topical, something that we just think is quite fun. And this goes straight out to the consumer, direct to their door each month, and we curate those flavors. So what's so exciting for us with the Pint Club, if I'm like, I haven't really described it as this in anything very formal, but essentially what we wanted at the very birth of it was to be a kind of ice cream parlor for the country. Mm. We'd so enjoyed, for both myself and Amber, along our journey, that interaction with the customers, you know, that was something right from the beginning. You know, people say these things, but we were those ones at those events. You know, it was our ice cream we'd made through the night. It was us at the event in front of people, seeing people enjoy it and access it. And that's something that doesn't leave you when someone discovers something that's really, you know, available to them suddenly or really good for them or they really like it. And I think the same for the customers, for the business customers too. You know, when we started out, one of the important things for us was to go and find out kind of how the businesses that would become our customers or hopefully become our customers, what were their gripes? What were their challenges? How were they interacting with a product like ours? So we really enjoyed that process. So any opportunity to kind of continue that interaction, get that feedback on, oh, actually, I quite like the way that vanilla is. It's not a traditional vanilla, but actually that's quite a nice flavor coming through. Or, oh, I enjoyed the ripple and the way you had that contrast. That engagement, coupled with us kind of saying, look, we want to be manufacturing the product ourselves. We want to push this forward for the industry, but mostly for the consumer. You know, we want to provide things that the consumer wants, that they enjoy. Having that level of engagement was like such a natural kind of extension of where we could go with the business. And, you know, the B2B is fantastic. And we sort of have these ideas of in the future, at some point, it'd be great to have a bricks and mortar and have our own setting. But I think the opportunity to suddenly put an experience in someone's home in a new setting and have them, you know, not just take out a tub, but actually, hey, let's take out, you know, we provide the cones and wafers and toppings, and to really elevate that from I'm just sitting down with a tub to no, I'm doing something and I can share that experience with my family, my friends. That was just such an exciting concept for us. So,
really, and that interaction is really exciting, isn't it? So let's think about your customers who are having this interaction. What gets them excited? Is it innovation? Is it new ideas, new flavors? And I guess this is the constant battle if you're making gelato. You want to make something interesting. You want to go further. You want to go further than you've been. But do a lot of your customers just want comfort and the meeting of expectations, i.e. chocolates, choc chip, and amazing vanilla? Which is the bit that they're most interested in?
It's a really good question. And I think it's something that will like evolve over time. I think those first people, those kind of early adopters, they're interested in something that's a little bit different. I think people who have jumped on with us at first are saying, wow, this is different. This is a flavor I'm not going to get in my retail store. And actually, even if it is a signature flavor, a mint choc chip or a strawberry, what they've done with it is really interesting and really different. And I haven't had anything like that before. So I think that kind of innovation element to it, and hey, I'm getting it in a different setting. And actually, they've laid on something for me here. This is something that someone's thought through, and there's a recipe card in there, and I can go and make an affogato, or I can go and do something else with it. That being able to interact with it, and the innovation, I think, is increasingly, what was really important for them at the beginning. I think what will become increasingly important is perhaps more that comfort element, that knowing that, especially as we establish ourselves more as a brand, that you can get, you know, you can have that confidence in the brand. And I know and I trust this brand. And actually, this can be become something that's quite comfortable and exciting. And over time, some of those customers who, you know, maybe weren't those typical early adopters, but got in, have emerged. And that kind of feedback we get from them is that that kind of joy of just seeing that blue box on the door, and they know that that's a nice time for them, and that's, you know, that's something that they're going to enjoy, and they've got that assurance. So I think it's a bit of both, but certainly I think the innovative side of things was quite an exciting aspect at the beginning.
Yeah. And now let's look ahead, really. You've established the brand. You've got a good start. You've got an award. Are you the sort of person who sticks to the plan, or is there something else that might catch your eye and change your direction a little bit?
I've always been one for the plan. I do like a plan, but not to sit on the fence with it. But I think that plan, any good plan, has always got to be pretty flexible. And, you know, you've got to revisit that each month. I think that's also, you know, probably an important thing for any startup is, There are things that you don't know, and you might have a really good idea, but you might just need to tweak it from month to month to make it a great one. And it's great to have that vision, but you have to be able to relate like your intangibles to your tangibles. So you must have the dream and the idea and the vision of where you're going, but it's important to bring that back to the paper and say, well, this is what the real plan is. This is what it's going to mean. And in month one, two, and three, this is what it'll look like. So no, really big ambitions, I think. One of the things that we wanted to do, as well as the subscription service, was to have, and I think is a good way for businesses to look at things, whether or not I should be saying that, I don't know, but is to look at it from a very omnichannel approach. It's become a bit more popular since the pandemic and people have had to look to B2C. But I think there's a lot of benefit to looking at those different routes to market, aside from it just being exciting to say, right, we can do something in retail, we could do something in food service, we'd like to do something direct ourselves. I think it just adds that kind of a layer of insulation or like risk mitigation to a business when you say, right, all our plant-based eggs are not in one basket. Actually, we've got a few things that we could do. And that's quite exciting. So yeah, for ourselves, for where we'll take it, I think we'd like to carry on exploring different routes to market and to continue being as innovative as we can. I think to some degree, if we were doing and only doing the Pint Club as a sort of innovative product in a couple of years' time, we probably wouldn't be doing our job. We've got to come up with something that's, you know, we'll keep that going and that will evolve, but we've got to keep pushing those boundaries. So, you know, we've just started a food service relationship with Dalesford Organics, and our food service is going through the wholesaler CLF and will be available now as well. And then on the retail side, we've got a launch with Planet Organic and soon to be with Selfridges, and I think about 80 other locations. So that's been really exciting as well. And what's really interesting with those two actually is it's afforded us in both instances the opportunity to have that engagement again with the customer. So both of those locations or varying stores of theirs, we're going to have a cart. So currently we've got one out at Muswell Hill outside the Planet Organic store there. And that just, again, just gives us that opportunity to have the engagement, which is so important for us.
Absolutely vital, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you actually come across the customer and find out what they want to say. Okay, so that's the more conceptual side of it. And what about actual products? Just the final question, really. Is there something that you're about to bring out, a new flavor, a new style of gelato, and another way of sending it? What's the next innovation you've got up your sleeve?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I really like the direction that a lot of companies have gone with, taking that sort of bite size route where, you know, I think Cadbury's and a number of other high profile brands recently, Cecily's also, where they've got these smaller bites and they're quite accessible. So I do quite like that. Whether or not we will go down that route, I don't know. I quite like some of the developments that we've seen kind of internationally in terms of the ingredients that are being used outside of the UK. I think there's some exciting things being done with things like chickpeas and tiger nuts. So we're looking at some developments there. Likewise, things like palettas, where you've got, you know, what is essentially a lolly, but you have a very high profile of fruit in there. I think that's quite an exciting direction to go in.
Yeah.
For us, obviously, we're innovating every single month with the Pint Club. So, you know, we've got a sour cherry this month in this month's box. And then next month, I think, is amaretto. So we're excited to bring that out. But yeah, we are looking at some more formats for 2022 spring, but probably can't say any more about them at the moment.
I knew you were going to say that. You just have to carry on subscribing. Yeah. Okay, well, look, good luck to you and well done for everything you've achieved so far. It's absolutely fascinating. Also really exciting just to talk about gelato, isn't it? Let's be honest. You've chosen the right one. Joseph, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thanks so much, Stefan. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters. And if you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry. Follow us to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening.